The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. To the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm going to be playing the role of Eric Metaxas. I hope you don't mind. It's the best we could do on short notice. But the good news is I have an exciting guest, Vera Sharov. Is that how we pronounce it?
Sharov, yes.
Sharov, you sure?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Vera, I don't know how to describe you, except I think the place I would start is you're a Romanian Jew
mm-hmm.
who survived the Holocaust, mm-hmm. and your father did not.
That's right.
And you've recently been talking about how you've been seeing in America some of the things that you saw as a young person in Europe during that hell. Am I stating it roughly correctly?
I'm recognizing parallels, yes.
You recognize parallels. So I want to talk to you about that. But first of all, you're a New Yorker.
Yes.
How long have you been in New York?
Since January 48.
What?
Yes.
1948? Alvin, that's months before we were born.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
So you've been here your whole life, really?
Pretty much, yeah.
And you came, where were you just before you came to New York?
In Israel, before it was the State of Israel.
So you escaped from Romania to Israel?
It's a long story.
Well, I want your story, because when you talk about seeing parallels today, that's what I've heard you talk about. You were on Patrick Coffin's Truth Over Fear conference over the weekend. But for people who don't know you or they missed the conference, I want that story. You're seeing draconian parallels, chilling mm-hmm. parallels today in America.
Right.
But what gives you the authority to speak about this is that you lived this. So let's tell your story. You were born in Romania. In the same decade as my mother was born in Germany.
Right. But when I was 3 and a half, my whole world collapsed. We were chased out of our home.
In Romania?
In Romania.
Where in Romania?
Chernovitz.
Uh-huh.
We had to wear the yellow Star of David as a sign of shame. We were deported and herded into a concentration camp in Ukraine.
Now, you were three and a half when this happened.
Yeah.
So this is 1940?
41.
41. And so the Jews in Romania, it wasn't until 41 that they got to you.
Chased out, yeah.
And you were sent to which concentration camp?
Mogilev.
Okay. And I assume you don't remember it very well because you were so young.
But I do remember things. See, what I remember is, first of all, being demonized as we were spreaders of disease. That's what the Nazis called the Jews. They put a great deal of fear through propaganda.
You know, it's funny. The New York Times, that's what they're saying the evangelical Christians are, because they refuse to get the vaccine. I find an interesting parallel there. We're not going to go down that
there
path.
There are plenty of but
so
but
you really remember this?
Oh, I remember. Look, I think that mostly people don't give children a lot of credit. Children absorb a great deal. They hear the adults talk. They sense the fear, because there was always fear in those 3 years that I was in the camp. The fear was for me to be separated from my mother after I had lost my father to an infectious disease, typhus.
So many people died of typhus.
Absolutely.
In those camps.
Yes.
I know I've read the experiences of Corrie ten Boom in, I forget where she was, which camp, the one where all the women were. It'll come to me later. It doesn't matter. Yes, Ravensbrück.
Ravensbrück.
So your father died in the camp.
Yes. Soon after. I think it was probably half a year after.
Did you have siblings?
The reason typhus was so prevalent is because of the conditions, overcrowding and no hygiene. Absolutely filthy. So, and that spread through lice. And so Himmler compared Jews to lice.
Yeah.
He said it was, this is not about ideology, this is not about, this is about health. Health.
Isn't that interesting? There's certain things you can use as a bludgeon.
Yes.
Health is classic. You're seeing it now with COVID. The specter of death trumps everything. And
that's
people
right.
say, I don't want you to say one word because these lives are at stake. And you think, ultimately, when are lives not at stake? They're at stake in every decision we make, and we
of
have
course.
To have some clarity. But so, okay, you remember being there. Your father died. Must have been very traumatic. So you're a little girl with your mother in a Nazi concentration camp. What can you tell us about that?
Hunger, the pain of hunger, because that's what this camp was essentially. It was to starve, and from time to time they would take men for slave labor. Some came back, some didn't. It was, as I said, fear was always hovering over. Death was hovering over us. I was rescued along with a couple of hundred orphan children. My mother lied to get me out, to save me. And this was in 1944. By then, it was the final solution was in full swing. And they were going to liquidate all the camps.
Now, for people that don't know, I mean, it's an amazing thing to think that the final solution of killing all the Jews didn't happen until fairly late.
That's
people
right.
think that it happened right away, and they think that in the 1935 this is going on. Absolutely not.
No.
This did not happen until halfway through, more than halfway through the
That's
war,
right. That's right.
that they make this decision.
That's right. So when I left, when I was rescued, I left in one of those cattle cars that were the ones that shipped everyone to concentration camps.
And you were six or seven?
Yes, six. And then we had to have someone in Romania. We were as if returned to Romania. And Romania was a pretty corrupt regime, as all are. But their money could buy you life. So essentially, our lives were bartered for money to the Romanian head of state. And so then I had an odyssey of about 10 months en route to Palestine.
Now, I've never known this. First of all, the idea that Jews in concentration camps could potentially get out. As a little girl, you got out through some... I mean, it's a bizarre thing. I've never heard of that.
It's... Yeah, I'm not totally sure which organizations, you know, got together and paid the ransom. But it was organized, not from the camp.
Yeah.
From abroad.
But it's just an amazing
Remember, they,
thing.
Hitler always needed money. I mean, this is... So there were things that were done. There were.
Yeah.
Very few, obviously. And this was sort of... In a sense, I could say it's miraculous. However, one of the things that I learned during the odyssey of being alone, a child
As
in transit.
As a six-year-old, without
a child
your mother.
Without my mother. And I was in transit. I was all the time. I learned to assess people. And I relied on the kindness of strangers. One couple, for example, a Romanian couple, a Christian couple, took me into their home and nursed me back to health. And I remember it very well because it was during Easter time, and they have very special eggs that they decorate, like embroidery. And at that time, it's also my birthday in April. So I remember it very affectionately, but of course lost touch with those people. And these were just kind-hearted people. Along the route, before boarding a boat that was to take us to Istanbul and from there to Palestine.
Wow.
Along the route, on the train to the port city of Constanza, I befriended a family.
Okay, this in show business, this is what we call a cliffhanger. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you're not going anyplace, so I'm not going to tell you don't go away. Why would you? We'll be right back with Vera Sharov. What a story.
You've been out right. Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I've found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Welcome back, folks. I'm talking to Vera Sharov, not her real name. Oh, it is your real name. Vera, what was your maiden name?
Roll. And actually, R-O-L-L.
Roll.
Roll.
Roll. Roll. Okay. And Sharov, so you're telling us your story. You said that you're 6 years old. You leave this camp, which is becoming a death camp. They're killing all the Jews. And at this young age, you're making your way to Palestine. So I'm assuming whoever paid the ransom, these were Jewish-friendly or Jewish, and they thought we can, even though we don't yet have a Jewish state.
Yeah.
So tell us, you're on the boat and you meet a couple.
No. Let's scroll back a little bit.
Oh, go back.
I befriended a family on the train to the port city.
Uh-huh.
And when we got there, there were three small boats. And I was assigned to be on the boat with all the orphan children. I refused. I absolutely refused.
Do you remember what month and year this is?
It was 44. It may have been June, something like that.
So you've now turned the hoary old age of seven. And you, at 7 years old, you refused to get on this boat.
I absolutely refused. Why? No matter what.
Why?
Okay. Because I trusted the family that I befriended on the train to take care of me. I didn't want to be with the other children. I was little. I didn't grow very much in the camp. And I just didn't want. And everybody else embarked, and I sat there, and I remember it very, very well.
You can remember this, sitting here.
I remember sitting in my little valise and crying my heart, crying, screaming, crying. I won't.
And is this couple near you?
No, they're on the boat.
They're on the other boat?
They're on the boat that they were assigned to be on. Everybody. It was empty. Everything was empty. Only I'm here, and there are the three boats. And finally, I prevailed. I don't know if that would happen today. Now, this is where it gets why I remember this so very well. The first night out at sea, while I was asleep, I used
what,
to be,
you managed to get on the boat with the couple is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I prevailed. They let me. They gave in. They gave in to the brat. Okay?
I'm looking for people like you in my organization, Vera. We'll talk later.
During that first night, a submarine torpedoed the boat with all the children. So my act of disobedience saved my life.
Was this a German U-boat?
You know, it's interesting. For maybe 30 years, 40 years, I thought it was, and everyone did, until it was found to be a Soviet, which...
Did they know what they were doing? They're just torpedoing ships?
Who knows?
They don't know that it's orphan kids?
No, I doubt it. But they were torpedoing. And it wasn't found out until much later. You know, a lot of that history wasn't fully unearthed until the Soviet ended.
Right.
Because there were archives that weren't touched before in East Germany. But the point is here... I somehow, you know, I don't know what it was. Certainly I was stubborn. But when I learned about it the next morning.
You learned about it on the other boat?
I learned about it, yes, because all the boats were together. These are small boats. These aren't luxury liners, you know.
Uh-huh.
They were all going at the same time. One was faster than another, so it had gotten to Istanbul before the two of us. When I heard it, I didn't say one word. But I thought to myself, I was right, damn it. And then I felt guilty. I had a pang of guilt. 7 years old, I had a pang of guilt that I was glad to be alive and not to have gone. So, it really is a symbolic kind of, it shows who I am, essentially. But it's something that I'm trying to convey to people to understand that they need to trust their own instinct, their own human, whatever they have. And that's what's being destroyed now, as it was then, you know. After all, when we were chased out and thrown out, you know, my father, my mother, they couldn't do anything. It's the most horrific thing when parents realize they can't protect their child, never mind themselves. There's nothing worse.
It's evil. I mean, let's face it.
It's exactly. I learned, really, I know what evil is.
Well, there are a lot of people that don't believe in evil.
Well, you see.
Which is fascinating, isn't it?
You know, I've thought about it, and I believe that one of the reasons that they throw at us, oh, conspiracy theories, is partly, of course, the politicians and those who are doing, who are running the show, know exactly. But other people, they seem to really be unable to imagine evil because they're not really evil.
Right.
Very few people are evil. But because they have others simply following along, they can do so much worse. Alone, they couldn't do it. So that the other people, the functionaries, and those who go along to get along, that's the worst betrayal, really, of us, of humanity.
Well, that's why we are here, right? In other words, whether you're talking about Hannah Arendt or you're talking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, silence in the face of evil is itself evil.
Yes.
So the idea, we don't know if he actually said it, but it's attributed to him, but the point is that if you do not speak up, if you go along with the crowd, you're complicit
absolutely
in evil.
Yes.
And we're seeing this now. I still want to finish your story, but I want to, of course, get back to the parallels of what you see today. But let's continue with your story. So you're making your way alone to Palestine,
mm-hmm.
age 7. Where does that go? What happens?
Well, when my mother sent me She had sewn into the seams of my coat every name, every person that she could possibly think of all over the world. Wherever I would land, that there should be some. And she had a sister in Palestine.
Wow.
And so the families kept me with them until they located my aunt, who came and picked me up. Again, those strangers, they had some, well, they had jewelry, they had, again, sewn into, you know, in the seams.
Were they Jewish also?
Yeah.
Yeah. And where had they come from? That's an amazing thing. You don't know.
I don't know, really. I think what it was that, as I said, in Romania, Jews were able to buy their way
for
a while.
Right.
And then that while ended.
Right.
And so then they used the money to, and perhaps those who were wealthy that way, in part financed for the children as well. You see, it might have been a piggyback kind of thing.
Yeah.
Probably. But anyway, okay, so I was with them in Israel by then for about 2 weeks, and then my aunt came and got me. And my aunt and uncle and their two sons lived on a farm, what you would call today an organic farm. I was with them for 3 years. It was the happiest part of my childhood. This is where I healed. Because I fit in exactly between one boy, my cousin, was 3 years older and the other one younger, and I fit right in. And at that time also, Israel was a very, very egalitarian kind of country, really. Nobody was wealthy. And nobody was really very poor. Of course, immigrants, when they came, they had to, until they could find them housing and all that. But it was still, you know, the British were still there. But the people were very, very welcoming.
Now, did your mother ever make her way?
My mother made her way to the United States. She decided, no, she's not going to Israel because she didn't want to be again in a war zone. She realized that war is approaching, and she didn't want that. So she wound up coming to the United States. And then I finally followed, but it was a long time. We were separated for more than 4.5 years.
So in 48... Yeah. You get on a ship to America.
Yeah, and I was sick again. It didn't matter that it was... That was an SS Marine Corps, you know, one of those kind of boats.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It wasn't the Queen Mary. We're going to be right back. I'm talking to Vera Sharav, Sharav. We'll be right back. It's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Everybody smiles at you. Hey there, Mr. Blue. It's a place to be with you. Prescription Dispensing Labs is a national licensed pharmacy specializing in personalized prescription and natural medicine. The pharmacists at PD Labs are credited with formulating unique nasal sprays for the dreaded brain fog and a leader in uncovering new compounds to improve your health. PD Labs is one of the first pharmacies to now offer a telemedicine group trained in prevention medicine and how to restore your health. They have developed signature professional supplements that really work rather than just promotional advertising. PD Labs Pharmacy prides itself on innovation and amazing customer service that show dedication to your health. Today, everyone needs a choice in their health care, and they bring many refreshing options on how to maximize your body's amazing capabilities to bounce back. PD Labs has an extensive network of practitioners nationwide dedicated to true health care, not sick care. Visit their website, pdlabsrx.com, for free health tips, podcasts, and their popular online store. Call 888-909-0110. Ask for Ray and tell them Eric sent you. That's 888-909-0110. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Vera Sharav. Vera, before we continue with your fascinating story, where can people find you online, or is there any way people can find you?
www.ahrp.org. It stands for Alliance for Human Research Protection.
.org.
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask you about your work You can be found on YouTube, Vera Sharov. Now, Vera, you were just talking about your mother makes her way to America, and she wants you to join her. So in 48, you leave Israel.
I left actually December 47 and got here January 48. Yeah.
So where do you go from Haifa? Where do you go from Israel?
Yeah, it was from Haifa.
From Haifa. And you come to New York. Your mother's in New York. Did she have relatives here?
My father's youngest brother was here.
So,
and in a sense, he helped her to get here, you know, paperwork and all that. That, you know, there was the whole thing with immigration, all that. And
so here you are now, what are you, 10 years old? And you come to...
Yeah, 10 and a half, yeah.
So you haven't seen your mother.
That's right.
What was that like?
Yeah, it's... that's part of... what do they call it? Like shrapnel, like the secondary...
Collateral.
Collateral damage. I always forget terms. Yes. Collateral damage is that when children get separated from parents... It never heals. It never heals. The child, intellectually, and even at the time, I understood that it was dangerous, and I had, it was for my good. I always said it. But in my heart, I resented that she sent me away. And I've spoken to others, and each one kind of same thing. You don't forgive. And I understand foster care children.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of anger in them.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
Because it's not it's against humanity.
Yeah. It's unnatural.
So, as I say, that collateral damage, there's a lot of others, not only those who, you know, perished. And, of course, the one of the things, when I came here, I do remember that, too. I had a harder time acclimating here than I did in Israel. It's a, you know, it's a different culture, different...
Oh, my goodness. It's New York.
Exactly. It's New York. And I realized all this luxury, all this, you know, where were you? Where was everybody?
Even at this age, you're thinking about
this. I was, where was... Yes.
Now, where were you settled in New York when you came here? Where did you go to?
Oh, it was... rooming houses for...
But I mean in Queens, in Brooklyn, in New York, in Manhattan, where...
Very short time in Brooklyn, but then it was in Manhattan, actually, in a rooming house.
In a rooming house.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, so this is the early 50s or whatever,
well,
it's the late 40s.
It was 48, 49, no, it was pretty much the whole time, yeah. Only the first 6 months we were in Brooklyn.
But you've been here ever since.
I've been here ever since, yes.
And, wow.
And I've seen all the changes. You know, the good and the bad. And right now we're in the horror zone.
Well, this is, I want to talk to you about all that, but I'm just fascinated with your story, and it's just important since we have the time to hear your story. It's a beautiful story, even maybe perhaps because there's such difficulty in the middle of it. But you, so you're a very young woman, you're with your mother. Where do you go from there? Did you go to right away into the public schools?
Yes. Well, we tried for, I don't know, less than a month in a yeshiva, a Jewish religious school, but I didn't like that at all. so, no, because in Israel, the schools, there were actually, you know, progressive schools and all that kind of thing. But, of course, it was very, very different than here. One of the things that got lost in the shuffle with new education and all that. You know what? In Israel, during the summer vacation, we had workbooks for each subject. And we sat down at around 10 o'clock with a few other children. I was with three others. You know, after having an orange and bananas, things that are in Israel. And we do our homework. You know, and so when you came back in September, you didn't forget. That was such a positive thing to do.
Mm.
Here, you think of summer break as, you know, let it all out. It's just, anyway, but as you can see, the culture was so different there than here.
Yeah.
So then I went to public schools,
In Manhattan?
Yeah.
Are any of the schools still around?
Yeah, I mean, I know the junior high school, Joan of Arc, is still around.
Yeah.
that was there, you know, again, that was progressive. So we had special. I was in the special writing class, the special this, that. You know, it was what I hated was actually high school.
Where'd you go to high school?
George Washington High School.
Where?
In Washington Heights.
That's where Henry Kissinger
grew
up.
That's what I was just going to say. And, you know, that doesn't make me any happier either.
But it's interesting. You think all of these ethnic enclaves.
Yes.
I know there's a lot of Greeks up there. It's just funny how there's different, you know.
There were
a lot of Dominicans, you know, different areas.
Yes.
Become different. I grew up in Jackson Heights, which was totally Jewish.
Uh-huh.
Until we moved to Connecticut and suddenly it became Colombians. But it's just so fascinating. So you're in Washington Heights. You didn't like. Why didn't you like George Washington High School?
Because it was so anonymous. It was big.
Oh.
And just hated it. And, you know, I mean, I remember at that time they would come to give cigarettes outside. You know, the luring children to become addicted and things like that were already happening.
Okay. We'll be right back. I'm talking to Vera Sharov. You can find her at AHRP.org. We'll be right back. I don't mind saying I just can't make it.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Once there was a way to get back homeward.
Talking to Vera Sharov. Vera, so you survived high school. What happens after high school?
I started college.
You did?
City College, yeah.
You knew you wanted to go and study further?
Yeah.
And what did you study?
Well, it was just the beginning, really. But eventually, what I studied was art history and history. I have a dual, yeah.
That's nice.
And, it's, you know, City College was a very good school at the time.
Yeah.
It was nearby. I lived, first we lived in 93rd Street, which was across from the junior high school, and then we lived on 140th Street, which is near City College. It's right there.
So what launched you on the trajectory? Because I want to talk to you, of course, about you're seeing these parallels between where we are today and some of the things you experienced as a child. What launched you on the trajectory? When did you get into the professional stuff? When did you get married? How did that happen?
When I was 18, I went on a year's seminar to Israel, a leadership seminar. And I met what would be my future husband, but that he was a reporter and he was a law school student. And there, for half a year, I lived on a kibbutz. So I learned what that was like, and I realized that, yeah, very nice, except that's not what I would want.
You're not
going
to live there. So you're in a kibbutz. This is the late 50s.
Yeah. I knew that I would not want to be ordered where I could work, when I could do this, that, and the other things, you know, being independent. And then I came back and finished college. And my husband came to the United States, and then we re-met, and then that was kind of it, and we married.
What year did you marry?
57. December bride.
Oh, wow.
I was young, really, but December bride. Yeah. We were married for 62 years.
So you were 20 years old? And you were married for 62 years. Your husband passed away a year ago.
Yeah, but not COVID.
No. But did they want to mark it down as COVID?
Yes, they did. The doctor told me, I have to. I said, no, you won't. I'll fight it.
He said, I have to?
I have to, yes.
Why?
Because he was ordered to.
But why? I mean, your husband did not die of COVID, so he's ordered to lie by somebody? By who?
Yes, well, it's orders were given. Orders were given by the government to hospitals to do that, and they did. I mean, we had for a long time so many deaths. And what happened to the deaths from pneumonia? What happened to the deaths from the flu? Every year we have lots of people die from the flu.
It was all marked as COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, we've jumped ahead 62 years, but that's okay because we're going to go back. But your husband died from what?
He was sick for a long time. He had dementia. And he was in an assisted living home, which was very good, unlike the nursing homes that you read about. He got weaker and weaker, and he really, really got weak. And I think, of course, 3 weeks we were separated because of the lockdown. That kind of finished it, but I was with him.
But people
last
aren't
two
talking
days.
About how the lockdown is killing people.
It is horrific. Yes, it's horrific what they're doing. I mean, okay, one of the important parallels that I have is between the nursing home slaughter all over Western Europe and the United States by order of government, and a project in Nazi Germany, T4. Those two are pretty much identical.
I've written about T4, so I'm familiar with it, but a lot of people wouldn't be.
No, I'll explain
it. So say what that is.
The first victims of the Holocaust were not Jews. They were German infants and young children under the age of 3 who were disabled in some way. Doctors drew up protocols how to medically murder the children. There were 22 wards in hospitals and clinics whose purpose was to murder the children.
This is the mid-30s?
Yes, 39.
Okay, late 30s.
39. The program was rather secretive, except that everybody in medicine and public health knew about it because they were given forms to fill for every child. And it was doctors, medical doctors, who selected each child, deciding whether death was due. The children were murdered slowly, starved, and barbiturates, but they wanted it to look natural.
You're making a parallel when Andrew Cuomo, the governor, sent old people to nursing homes and then sent people afflicted with COVID into the nursing homes. You're saying it was intentional. They knew that they are, to use a nice term, culling the weakest elderly out. Why? Why would they do that?
Okay, going back to the Nazi part, after the young children, it was children of all ages with any disability, and then was the mentally ill, and finally the nursing home residents. Now, you ask the purpose. They had sort of three purposes. One was to cleanse the genetic pool, Remember, we're talking about eugenics.
We're talking about the Nazis.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're unfit, they wanted to kill off passing on genes they don't like. So we'll murder them. Yeah.
The second reason was to eliminate the economic burden of worthless eaters.
Yeah.
The economic burden of nursing homes is equal.
Okay, and so you're saying that, Andrew, we have to go to break here. We'll be right back to complete these sentences. Holy cow, Albin, Chris, yes. I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm in South Dakota.
Ah! On purpose?
I have no idea how this happened, but I'm here. Actually, I'm not just in South Dakota. I'm in Mitchell, South Dakota. Oh, who hasn't heard of Mitchell, South Dakota?
Are you posing for your Rushmore statue? Are you posing for your Rushmore statue?
No, that's way on the other side of South Dakota. That's on the western side of South Dakota in the Black Hills. I'm on the eastern side of South Dakota, not very far from the Minnesota border. But the fact is that today, the reason I'm in South Dakota is because Mike Lindell is launching Frank's Speech, frankspeech.com.
Woo-hoo.
Today is the official day, the 10th of May. And guess where he's launching it from? Did you guess?
South Dakota?
The Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. Oh, the Corn Palace? Yeah, yeah. Not a Corn Palace. The Corn Palace. If you go to the website, it says it's the world's only Corn Palace. Because that's been a question in a lot of people's minds. How many Corn Palaces are there? Who doesn't ask that question at one time or another? And then you realize, son of a gun, there's almost no Corn Palaces, but there is one. It's in Mitchell, South Dakota. Do you want to hear about what the Corn Palace is?
What is it?
I was wondering when he said, we're going to do this event. By the way, Joe Piscopo is going to be there. I'm going to be there. And Mike Lindell is going to be there. What could possibly go wrong?
I don't know. It sounds like
Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong? It's Mike Lindell, Joe Piscopo, and me on the stage at the Corn Palace to launch frankspeech.com. Now, this is a big deal.
Yes, it is.
The only problem is Mike Lindell, because he's like, you know, doing a million things at once and saving the world. He hasn't told me what he'd like me to talk about at the Corn Palace. So between now and when I'm on the stage alone among the corn, I have to think about what it is that I want to talk about.
I think I know. I know. Bonhoeffer used to love corn. He loved popcorn.
He loved creamed corn because it was good and mushy. Oh, man, you're right. I'll talk about Bonhoeffer. Well, look, let's just to get serious here. We've had Vera Sharov on as my guest. It's been amazing, but we're not done. We're going to when I'm done with this few minutes, we're going to go back to Vera Sharov so she can continue her story. Wait till you hear the ending, because it's insane. But she's wonderful, and I'm thrilled we had her. We've got to have her back. She's an extraordinary woman. But we are right now. So I'm in South Dakota. And how did I get here? I flew, obviously. But the fact is that yesterday was Mother's Day. So yesterday I woke up in Danbury, Connecticut, which my mommy's house. And Suzanne was there and my father was there. And we woke up and we went to his Vineyard Church in Bethel, Connecticut, where I spoke. And I talked about a Mother's Day miracle. Actually, maybe I should tell this miracle after Vera Sharov, because this is an amazing story. I've never told it publicly until yesterday, but maybe I can tell it. This is a real miracle.
This is Miracle Monday in a way. So,
well, I know, but this is a real miracle that happened to me in 1996, and I'm going to tell it after Vera Sharov. I'll tell this. So I want to remind you folks that I'm at the world's only Corn Palace tonight, one night only. That's right. And Mike Lindell is launching Frank's Speech. You can watch it live. I think it's 6 p.m., 5 p.m., 6 p.m. tonight. It's going to be live on frankspeech.com. You should be there anyway. if I leave you with only one thought today, it's go to mypillow.com or mystore.com and use the code Eric, and go to Nutramedics.com and use the code Eric. I took Relax Medics last night and I'm still not awake. All right. We'll be back with more Vera Sharov, and I'll tell a miracle story. It's a real story. You'll see.